Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this May 5th, 2023, 10:05 on the clock. You have your host, James J. Maloff, here. And part two today at 10:30, we're going to talk with our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. We got some of the cast of The Curious Savage, along with director Stephanie joining us. Going to go ahead and talk about that. Looking forward to it. Right now on the phone, our good friend, Representative Scott Krug, joining us. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm squeezing this in today. We had a pretty busy week, so I'm getting all caught up from everything. So I'm glad we were able to make this work today.
Yeah, I got to do this, Scott. I got to let the audience look behind the curtain a little bit here. We weren't sure if Scott was going to be able to join us because he had a meeting that was planned for yesterday, and you and your team over there had a backup and then a backup to that backup, and I really appreciate that. Man, you guys go above and beyond like a lot of our representatives do around here, and we really appreciate that. There are plenty of times where people have to cancel, and we're kind of like left here, you know, figuring it out. I appreciate that you guys do that. A couple of those ideas you had, by the way, between us, I really want to do those. I think they're really good ideas.
So I am one of the, for really lifting the curtain, just for people to know, is one of the things we were thinking about was introducing my newest staff person mm-hmm. to the audience. So Marina Olenek is our new, when you call the office, she'll be the main point of contact. So Marina's been with us about 6-7 weeks. She's originally from Ukraine. And she is just, I mean, I can't wait to introduce her to everybody in the show here. So hopefully when it gets past state budget time here, we can kind of get you introduced to Marina so you can put a face to the name, so to speak, on radio, however you do that.
Yes. Looking forward to that.
She's got a great story that she could tell. So
That's going to be a really fun conversation. We're looking forward to that, Scott. And again, thank you to you, your team over there. You guys do a great job. We appreciate it. I don't know if this is rude or not, Scott. Well, wait a minute. First, I wanted to get to, where are you calling us from?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. So I'm on my way down to Castle Rock Lake, got some real estate stuff. So I'm sitting at the corner of 13 and 21 at the Quick Trip down in Friendship. So
Right on. Scott, I don't know if this is rude or unclassy of me to do this. I don't know how this works necessarily. I'm not as political savvy as some people. Is it cool if I bring up another person's bill to you? Is that rude? Is that like wearing the concert of another band when you go see a different band or something at a show? I'm teasing.
I've never gone to a concert and worn the T-shirt of the band I'm going to see.
Yeah,
I think that's weird. It's weird.
I'm 100% with you on that. It's weird. I actually, and in all truthfulness, I think that this is something that is similar to stuff we've talked about before, and it is a bipartisan bill. I bring it up because it kind of broke overnight a little bit. The story kind of broke yesterday, and I personally was able to hear more about it yesterday, late last night. And I do think it carries some important information. I'm talking about the U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin and Rick Scott introducing this bipartisan legislation to promote transparency online and support Made in America goods and companies. The Cool Online Act updates our labeling laws for the online era. For those that don't know, it is mandatory when you walk into a store that it says on there, made in such and such. But online, it is not a mandatory thing. I think that's news to a lot of people, including myself. It's been in the last 24 hours, I learned that. I tend to be a pretty informed person. I love learning. So my brain's got a ton of useless knowledge up there. But one of the things I didn't have was this. So part of the reason I wanted to bring it up was to make this more common knowledge so people understand that. But also, I wanted to get your take on this. Where are you coming in on this? And did you hear about this bill behind the scenes a little bit, too, as I know you and your colleagues talk a lot?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that's been out there for quite a few years. So, I mean, it's going to take some bipartisan effort to get something like this done because, you know, back in the day, back when Walmart was first kind of being a big thing, you used to be able to go to Walmart and know that everything that Walmart procured was mostly made in the United States, right? I mean, that was their thing, right?
Yeah.
So now you walk into a Walmart or you buy off an Amazon site, I mean, 90% of what you're buying is made in China. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever it's worth. I mean, I think the biggest reason behind a bill like this is to help people understand that smart consumers can bring back American manufacturing on their own. I mean, that's the biggest need we have right now is to create manufacturing jobs and be able to create things here in the United States, here in Wisconsin, here in Wisconsin Rapids. And smart consumers are going to be behind making those choices to start bringing back those manufacturers and being able to make things here in the United States by just making better choices. So, I, whether they still want to, consume the goods they do or not, that's fine. Just, making people aware is actually going to end up helping every manufacturer in the state and the country.
One of the things that if our listeners don't do it, I tend to do is kind of look at the other side of things, take the other angle on stuff oftentimes, because I just, it's part of the conversation. It's part of how we do this and everything, interviewing and all that. But with this one, I'm having a hard time seeing the negative. Like, have you heard any pushback on this? Has there been anybody saying, no, this would be a bad thing or anything? Because I can't see the negative in it.
I would imagine there would probably be some of the bigger online retailers who think it might hurt their business, but in the end it'll end up not being a big deal. I mean, Amazon will probably come out and say, well, we don't want to have to do more disclosure stuff on our website. It clogs up our, there's always going to be a lobbyist somewhere in the halls of Washington or in the halls of Madison that's going to come in and say, well, my benefactor doesn't want this, so we'll come and talk to legislators about it. So there's always somebody.
Yeah, and you're right about that. I don't know how you necessarily fix something like that either, but it is a little disheartening to hear that. But I think that overall, it's something that we're going to see go forward. I can't see this getting. You mentioned it takes years for this to build, and I think that's always important to note when it comes to things like this, because I got to think, you survey 20 people, you're going to get 20 people that'll say that, yeah, I want to know where my product is coming from, whether they want to buy American or not. I would think that most people wouldn't want to know that. But that doesn't mean that it's just going to happen overnight. The bill's just going to go ahead and get taken forward. It's important to understand how these things, the process of these things go. You and I have talked about this many times. I think that we'd have much more people voting, and we would have better voters if we made it more mandatory that, hey, you need to know how this system works, how a bill is passed, like certain things. Do you know that there are three branches of government? Can you name them? Can you, these little things that we learn in grade school that we seem to forget sometimes as we get older?
Well, things that we used to learn, and that's another whole story, but yes, you were right. But, it brings up a great point of even the things we're working on this week that kind of put this conversation in jeopardy was something that's taken 20 years for us to deal with at the state level. So, it's a good segue into some of these things that, take almost a generation to figure out. So this budget cycle, we've really worked on finding consensus on our shared revenue plan, where communities across the state collect taxes, right? And they have to send a portion of that to the state. It gets divvied up by a formula. And usually the more rural and smaller cities and villages of the state kind of lose out in that formula. So we've finally have figured out a way to revamp their shared revenue model that every municipality in the state of Wisconsin can be a winner. And that's what it takes to get a bill done, is to find winners and winners instead of winners and losers. Because when we start talking about creating potential losers, you lose votes. So that's what the bill in Washington you're talking about doing is creating winners, and this bill that we're working on in shared revenue is creating the same thing here in Wisconsin.
I saw this growing up a lot in Illinois, and I imagine that most states in the union have this issue where, most people understand Illinois is almost two states. You've got Southern Illinois and you've got Northern Illinois, and they're two very different areas. And oftentimes in Springfield, you would have these two worlds collide, and sometimes it seemed like they were doing just things for Chicago that didn't really apply in Suki, or in Southern Illinois, and vice versa and stuff. Getting that balance down for states, I understand America's a young country, but we've also been doing this a while. Isn't that negotiating? Like, because that's a big part of what politics is, whether we like to call it that or not, is negotiating. And these things like, hey, here's a bill that's going to help these people, here's a bill that's going to help these people, and kind of doing the best we can with that model.
Yeah, it is. Everything in politics is sales. If you haven't spent any time doing any sales or negotiating, then you're not going to be great in politics, because that's what it is. Whether it's a trade-off on this bill or a trade-off down the road, it's a lot like the NFL draft or working the as a GM of a sports team. I'll take a player to be named later if you can give me this now.
Scott, don't do it. Don't bring up the draft. Well, all we'll talk about is the draft the next 20 minutes, and I know you got more important things to talk about. I'll do it.
Yeah, right? But I always go back to it. I mean, sports are always a great analogy, and yeah. This is no different, where you get what you can when you can and know that the timing's right to make a move, and you pull the trigger. So, I mean, that's where we're at right now, especially when we have some money that we need to do some things with instead of letting it sit in the bank account of the state. You know, we're going to do tax cuts because that's where the surplus comes from, is we collect too much in taxes. So after we fund all our priorities and we have this surplus we need to deal with, then let's start revamping the things that we used to do, whether it's shared revenue to make sure that our towns and counties and municipalities all have the money they need to do their road repairs, to fund their, you know, local projects. I mean, whatever it may be, that's what the shared revenue stuff is for. And then, you know, we start figuring out what's left even after that. So now this plan in particular, we're going to take 1 cent of the state sales tax, so 20% of it overall, and send it back to every municipality in the state of Wisconsin for them to make their own decisions with. And I think that's just a brilliant idea. And it's actually, for Adams County, even where I represent on the county board, it's going to equate a 2,000% increase in our shared revenue for Adams County. I mean, it's just an amazing idea that we've put together that both sides have agreed on. And I know the governor's not quite completely there yet, but I'm sure we'll get him there with some tweaks and conversation and negotiation.
When it comes to negotiating, when it comes to some of these bills, one of the concerns I think that many I've heard from listeners, I've seen stories about, is the last couple of elections we've had, there have been bills that have been proposed to help schools. Overwhelmingly, we've seen most of those bills not pass. There's a deep concern right now with our education system, especially some of our rural communities that are having a hard time literally keeping the lights on at schools. I can't think of many more ridiculous things that happen in America than us not taking care of our schools. For those that don't know, just to catch you up on this, that's who's taking over. That's the future. Like, if we're not keeping them educated, if we're not, we've seen the test scores, we've heard a lot of complaints about those things in Wisconsin, but I don't see anybody putting in any work into the, or any money into these schools. I see a lot of people pointing fingers, but I'm not seeing a whole lot of people actually giving up their tax dollars or these kind of things to make these schools better, to help these teachers, help these educators out. Are you seeing, where are you falling on that? Because I know you don't agree with me.
So we've made historic investments in K-12 each of the last three budgets.
Oh, I should be more specific, Scott. So I'm talking about like the more rural bills, like for particular schools. I'm not talking about like state budgets or state bills or that kind of thing.
Right. So, and another example is just down here at Adams Friendship Way, there was just a $4 million operating referendum that was passed by the voters. I mean, so... Yes, I get where you see the stories and you hear the news about it, but, you know, I think voters all have the right to make their choices, and I know sometimes it's tough for them to want to spend more money on it, but that's what we've left in place, is that option for them to make those choices to make bigger investments. For the most part, 90% of the time, they pass every referendum that comes up, so I'm...
I'm not using this data from a story I read. I'm using my own eyes. Okay. I'm from what I'm seeing, and I'm not seeing a lot of these bills. For every four bills that are proposed, one of them is passing. And in the last two election cycles, this is what we've seen in local voting. I'm not talking again about the state budget or anything like that.
Yeah, right. But I don't know. I mean, I'd have to know which ones aren't working.
Sure. And maybe we could talk about, maybe this is part one of a part two conversation. We could talk more about this the next month when we get together again.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'll be a lot more settled where everything is as far as, you know, the entirety of the state budget. And that'll be the biggest portion that'll get done last, is figuring out what gaps exist and how to fill them and make sure that our achievement and our scores and our accountability all match the money that we're putting into everything. So I think we've had some pretty good agreement the last few years on making sure that we do everything we need for the tech schools and for the universities on top of it. And we're on it. I think it's a finger on the pulse type of thing, staying in connection with our local districts too and talking through some of the things they're dealing with. I've got a lot of smaller school districts, you know, the Wild Roses, the Almond Bancroft, the Adams Friendship, all of the smallest of the small districts, and it's relatively peaceful right now. So I I'm hopeful we'll keep finding ways to help them with their priorities.
Only have so much time, so just to keep things moving, I wanted to make sure we touched on this. You have Assembly Bill 24, as you have commented. It's a good common sense bill. I want to talk about what this bill is to those that don't know and why it's important.
No, I lost you for a second there. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I didn't know if I... It's your bill, so for a second there, I'm like, did I give him a stumper? Did I...
No.
I don't like to do the gotcha questions and everything. I didn't think I got you on that. We just have a connection issue, yeah. Can we tell people what this common sense bill is?
Yeah, and this one is super simple. I mean, this is one where, you know, we're talking about, okay, schools, if you don't already do this, which most, I would think, do... We want you to be able to post information for students to be able to see that'll help them understand that if they're a victim of child abuse or neglect, that there's an avenue for them to report it or an avenue for them to get some help to be able to talk to somebody. So what AB 24 does just requires school districts to post this information in a school building somewhere. And the genesis for this thing was a little interesting, too, is because it was 6 or 7 years ago, I passed a resolution that just made June paper making month in the state of Wisconsin, just a, you know, one of those weird little things we do. And Nakusa High School actually took a copy of that resolution and posted it on the wall of their school building. I'm like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. You know, they're paying attention to what we do. They, you know, have ways to get information out. So then somebody else had come to us and said, well, if schools are watching and listening and you guys can tell them what to do, why don't we make them post different things like this? I'm like, wow, that's a great idea. You know, one of the challenges we have yet, though, is there's not like a, you know, like when you had Terry on where there's a 211 number mm-hmm. for all of these types of things. There isn't necessarily, for these posters in every community, a centralized number. So we said in the bill, all right, whatever local number you use that can connect somebody to a local resource, you go ahead and use whatever you think is best. We didn't demand that we create a new number or anything that's easy to remember. So it might be a little wonkiness in there for people to know in their heads that, hey, if I need to call something, this is the easy number to call instead of trying to think of 424 or 819, whatever. But I think the overall point of the bill is just to make sure that kids know that they're not alone, that they're not isolated, that if they're a victim of these things, there is an outlet they can talk to somebody who they can then trust that'll help them. So I think that's the whole reason behind this bill is just it's a common sense thing that just gives people a little extra added support.
Of all the things that we have talked about, Scott, going back to the Made in America kind of, or that cool bill about the knowing where things are located when you buy them and that kind of thing online, I got to think this is one of the more easier kind of like, you know, yeah, 100% of the vote, everybody's in with this one. Getting this information, making sure it's that available for kids. Again, what are we doing if we're not protecting kids? What are we doing if it isn't about kids and the youth and everything? It seems pretty explanatory.
Yeah, and the nice thing about this bill, again, it's a bipartisan, bicameral bill. There's Republicans and Democrats signed on to in both houses. I mean, that kind of makes it one of those slam dunk things once it gets through the legislature that the governor will say, okay, you all agree on it, so let's just do it. So that's all of the work that we do is so front end dominated, right? You want to make sure you've got the right mix of co-sponsors, the right mix of people from different houses. So yesterday we had a big announcement on our first set of election bills that we're actually going to get out as well. So we did a press conference, and if anybody picks up the State Journal today, you'll get to see a bipartisan, bicameral group of legislators working on election integrity bills. I mean, it didn't get much better than that. So if you find the right people and you find the right issues and you do this at the right time, anything is possible. So to sit here and tell you that 3 years ago I would have thought that we would have had bipartisan, bicameral agreement on election integrity would have blown people's minds, right? Yeah. I mean, now it's something that is a reality because we've taken the time to do the work to get ready to do more work. So, you know, behind the scenes, this is a bigger and bigger and bigger thing that brews besides the headline of the bill title that comes out.
One of the things I know that you have been putting a lot of time into recently is the bill to help local control on solar projects. I wanted to give you a moment to talk about that and the importance of it.
Yeah, this one is came out of nowhere, right? So this bill was around last session and didn't much go anywhere. And of course, I've been hearing for years, you know, because of all of the CAFO stuff in Saratoga that turned into the solar power, the solar panel stuff, people were upset because of the process. So currently, if you're a municipal or utility-owned company wants to put in a solar array somewhere, there really is no local input. It just goes to the PSC. If you buy the land and the PSC, it's good. Doesn't matter what the local government says, it gets cited. So that's what we have now in Saratoga, over here in Wautoma, over up by Plains, Plover. All of these thousands of acres of solar projects going in without local input. So this bill says, okay, we're going to do this, but we're going to allow these to happen on a smaller scale, because if the utilities get this process, then why shouldn't an individual farmer, say, somewhere in the middle of Washera County, be able to rent out 40 acres of his land to a private developer that wants to put in a solar field and get subscribers for solar power and make it market-driven and require that every town approves it by a two-thirds majority vote? So it's best of both worlds. It's a big local control bill, and it's also a expansion of solar power using the private sector and giving farmers or, you know, anti-school buildings or whatever it may be, the ability to create these arrays that you don't need to be a municipal-owned utility or utility-owned company to put in a big solar panel project. So it just, it captures both sides of the aisle again, because we have a lot of, you know, clean energy folks who really want to see the expansion of solar power happen in the state of Wisconsin. We have a lot of the conservative folks who want to see more private investment into this and a government investment into it. So when you craft all those details out of those overarching arguments, you end up with a lot of co-sponsors from both sides of the aisle again. So I think that's kind of the exciting thing here, is that we can expand on solar power and clean energy jobs and the opportunities that exist with that, and give people a lot more control over the process.
It feels like another layup. You know, with the bipartisanism of it, with the combination that you mentioned there, it does feel like another layup, and a good thing for this, because this is not promoting solar power. It's just trying to give people a little more control in the, you know, placement of it and those things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's something we're not going to see more argument about, a 3,000-acre solar panel array and people being upset because it ate up all the local farmland. Well, if it eats up these projects we're talking about, are 20 to 40 acres, not 3,000 acres. So if a farmer wants to use his back 40 that isn't very productive and he wants to create an income stream, then why shouldn't we let him work with a private investor to create a power ability for local neighborhoods to subscribe to? So I think, you know, like I said, all of these bipartisan things, when they get to this point, they get easy, but the work behind them to get them started is what is the biggest struggle. Mm. And this bill in particular, I wasn't even a co-sponsor of it last year, because it didn't really resonate with me. So as these things sit around, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, as they marinate for a while, then legislators start thinking more and more about them, and then they pick up steam and they get done. So it's all that sausage-making process, all goes into all of these things we talked about today that are, you know, behind-the-scenes labor-intensive, but in front of the camera is easy to describe.
We usually wrap up talking a little bit of Brewers. I'm not going to bring it up.
They haven't won in May yet.
We'll just keep moving. But I did want to mention that you were recently at the Posters and Rotunda event at UWSP. How did that go?
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I love when the college kids are coming down to Madison talking about their projects, talking about things that they want to advocate for in their campuses. So we've had a lot of students that came in from UWSP. Talking about some of the projects they're working on for their undergrad and some grad students nowadays. Talking about things that are way over my head that I'll probably hardly ever understand. But it's nice to be able to get a good grasp of their excitement about learning and how they go about, you know, securing funds for their future projects. And this thing has actually grown into something much bigger. So now we have students from all over the state that are not just coming down for Posters on the Rotunda, but they've been so involved with us over the years that their campuses are bringing them down just to advocate for most any other thing. So we just had a group in this week from UW Oshkosh talking about things on their campus, and had a chance to visit the campus this week in Oshkosh and I mean, it's great to see all these future leaders take an interest in what we do in Madison, and they've been coming out in droves this budget session, which is a welcome change from seeing them versus seeing all the lobbyists.
Scott, we appreciate the time, as always, especially how hard you work to get on the air with us. Thank you for that. If people have follow-up questions, want to ask you stuff or talk about some of the things we have, how can they reach you?
Yeah, easy. Cell phone's always on. 715-323-3293.
You have a good weekend. We'll talk again next month. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate the time. Representative Scott Krug, Wisconsin Assembly District 72 representative, joining us. He'll be back with us next month. Right now, we're going to move out of the way and bring in the King from WRCT. They are coming in to talk about The Curious Savage that is premiering tonight. We'll be talking with them when we come back on Morning Magazine here at WFHR, locally grown radio.